Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Odyssey celebrates Mother's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Marty Griffin, talking Chauvin, talking America, talking reform and justice. And I got to mention something about that caller in the last hour. Chris, did he hold Michael for probably an hour, right? What he said is ignorant by definition. By definition. For him to suggest that, in essence, what he was saying was Floyd deserved to die. That Chauvin knew all this going in. That he somehow believes in his deluded way that all those cops knew of everything and anything that they had heard or seen or read about Floyd before that incident. That's what scares me about America. Hey, nothing personal, Chris, but you got to look at yourself in the mirror, man. Is somehow after watching that videotape and listening to police officer after police officer testify that Chauvin was wrong, for you to suggest that somehow he wasn't scares the hell out of me. For you and for everyone out there. Because that's the underbelly of society. He waited an hour to tell me that Chauvin's innocent. Scary, man. I had to grab one of the best defense attorneys around, an old friend who has seen everything twice like I have, who sees color more than most because he is African-American and who is flat-out honest about it. Blaine Jones, good morning. How are you, sir?
Marty, good morning. It's great to talk to you. Hello to all of your listeners. Thank you for having me on.
So what scares me is Chris, who waited an hour to tell me that all of those officers knew of anything in George Floyd's background that would make them nervous and that everything they did was appropriate. That's the guy in the jury that would scare the hell out of an attorney like you, would it not, sir?
Well, you know, I did not hear this gentleman, Chris, call, but I can answer this in two different ways. I can answer it as the lawyer, and I can answer it as an African-American man. As a lawyer, I would ask Chris, you know, that's okay to have that statement. It's called a conclusory statement, okay? But what is your evidence supporting that? What would he say the officers could articulate that would show that Mr. Floyd should have been essentially killed in public? That's what I would say. Let's talk about the evidence. That's what they say to you in law school. Don't make a conclusion. Give me the logic that leads up to your conclusion. That's the one part. Now, if I take off that hat and I put on my hat as an African-American man who grew up here in Western Pennsylvania, you know, Marty, I've dealt with so much racism, your head would spin. I can remember it growing up in Moon, in the first grade, getting it.
Give me an example. Hold on, man. Give me an example. First grade.
Sure. I can give you an example of when my parents moved from Aliquippa to Moon when I was 5 years old. The people that we bought our house from refused to sell it to us because we are black, and my parents threatened to sue. So, of course, they relented because, you know, they were, my parents, I mean, as I was young, but they were afraid that they would mess up the neighborhood by letting black folks in. And then when we got there, people did foul stuff to us. And I remember, I just heard the N-word throughout. That was just what it was. You know, you hear about it in sports and stuff. That was the norm. I had teachers that were raw. My parents had to come up to the school. I just got it nonstop. I can give you example after example of growing up and dealing with it. So
hold on, Blaine. This is important that folks understand the context of this. So you were an African-American moving from Aliquippa to what would be considered an all-white area, right?
That is correct, Marty. Yeah.
And how often were you called the N-word, sir?
Oh, Marty, as a kid, nonstop. I just say it again.
Why is it you're not angry all the time?
Right now? Yeah. Right now?
Yeah.
You know what, Marty, I don't think that's fair. You know, as you mature, you say to yourself, I don't like the way I was treated, so therefore, why would I treat everyone else that way? It doesn't make sense. And then you try to get to this level of zen where you say to yourself, you know, people such as the caller, Chris, that you labeled as, I think, ignorant, he's going to be ignorant regardless. Yeah. My best friend in this world is a white guy. And, you know, I think...
Phil DeLucente, right?
Prejudice... not Phil. But I think a lot of racism and prejudice comes from a lack of two things, exposure and education. I think if we're exposed to one another, we see we're all the darn same. And education, I think if the American educational system was honest about what happened to African-American people, people would say, okay, you know what? I get it. They were in slavery for 246 years. They were basically just said, okay, you guys aren't slaves anymore, but we had nothing, redlining and such. I think if people knew, they would get it. But Marty, if I can give you an example of something that just happened to me. The other day, this was January 6th, the day of the Capitol riots, I had to go to Bedford County, and I drove. I had an attempted homicide down there, big case, 2 hours away.
Yeah.
Now, no one knows me down in Bedford County. No. I get out of my car. I drive a nice car. I walk into the courthouse. Now, Marty, I'm wearing a very nice Burberry overcoat. I'm wearing a custom suit.
He's the best-dressed man in Western Pennsylvania. I'm not kidding.
I think I look the part, and I'm carrying a briefcase.
Yeah.
There's a deputy sheriff. I've never been there before. I said to her, excuse me, miss, can you tell me where's the courtroom? She looks at me, and she goes, the defendants go that way. Now, Marty, so listen, I never go to race. So I said, okay, thank you, ma'am, but I know what time it is. I get it. So then I go to the courtroom. I'm doing something else. I go down to another part. My clients are down there. My client happens to be white, so I was talking to my client. This other lady runs over to me with this board, and she's like, I don't see your name on here. I need to know your name. What's your name? I said, what are you talking about? She said, all the defendants need to check in with me. I said, miss, I'm not a defendant.
So hold on. So people know what he's saying here. He's one of the best attorneys in the country. He's being accused by two different people of being the criminal. Go ahead.
Not just two different people, both members of law enforcement. And then a third member of law enforcement said the same thing to me, Marty. So this is the problem. We have subconscious bias,
yes,
members of society, whether it's law enforcement or not. The question is, how does that subconscious bias play out? So think about that. Three different members of law enforcement looked at me, and all they could see was the color of my skin. They couldn't see anything else. They didn't care about me using the proper King's English, nothing. All they saw was the color of my skin, and they deduced, because of that, I had criminal charges and I was a defendant. So this type of thing is not rare. You know, I remember when I first came out in my practice, and I went to a courtroom in one of the counties here in Western Pennsylvania, and I was in a courtroom, and the judge said to me, she looked at me, I had my briefcase, she said, sir, where's your attorney? This is a judge, Marty. So, you know, it gets old and it gets tired. But I know that's not why you had me on.
No. Come on, man. You hit the vein, man. Sorry, but...
But that's the realness of it, Marty.
This is why
people
I love you.
You don't realize that.
This is why I love you.
I'm honest.
And in that context, this just continues. Obviously, what about your kids? You have amazing kids. Do they experience the same racism, or has the game changed a bit, I hope?
Great question. Yeah, I think the needle has moved in the right direction.
Okay.
But I can tell you, you know, my great-grandparents migrated here from the Deep South.
Yeah.
So I knew my great-grandparents. They experienced racism. My grandfather, I knew him. He experienced racism. My dad, Ivy League educated, but yet he was always the vice president at the various hospitals because they would always put in like a late 30s, early 40s year-old white guy. My dad was the kind of like the Morgan Freeman character, the guy who was chaperoning mentoring this person, as opposed to my dad being the president. My dad experienced tons of racism. I experienced tons of racism, and now my kids. That's six generations of racism. To answer your question, in my opinion, has it gotten better from the stories my great-grandparents used to tell me? Absolutely, yes. But the fact that my kids are dealing with this BS, it drives me nuts, because it's simply like, we just don't understand that we're all the same. We're all Americans, and we have to figure out that there's no difference with us.
Man, can you hang, man?
Of course.
Can you hang?
Marty,
man, this guy's a man. Look up success in the dictionary, and you see a picture of Blaine Jones. He's absolutely an amazing attorney. Insane success rate. Probably the best dressed man in Western Pennsylvania. Amazingly successful wife. But, and I say this, but he's African-American. Why do I say that? Because of the story he just told. My man goes to a courthouse to defend someone in a murder case, someone who put their life in his hands, and three times he's told that he's a criminal. The defendant, by folks in the business. So think about the chances that of a real defendant that they have in this system, which leads me to Chauvin. So Blaine, regardless of the evidence in that case, was there a part of you that said, this could go either way? And were you afraid of that, sir?
Well, you know, Marty, juries are unpredictable. I think if you get 12 people in a room to decide what type of pizza they want, you know, that's a difficult decision. And you know, I wasn't invested in a case like that from a professional standpoint, right, as crazy as that may sound.
Right.
As a human being, I think we all, forget black, white, whatever, I think as a human being, you look at that and you're like, something ain't right about this. But as a professional, I know this may sound a little crazy, Marty, but you know, I consider myself a legal purist. Like, I like the purity and the sanctity of the law. One of my fears is that I didn't think Chauvin was going to get a fair trial. And what I mean by that is, when you look at a case that's garnered local, national, regional, and international attention like this, there's no way that you can show me someone that did not form an opinion that a jury is going to be fair and impartial. I thought the judge erred by not keeping the people, or sequestering the jury throughout the trial. Did I think he would get off, so to speak? Did I think there would be a full acquittal? I did not. I thought the prosecution did an excellent job of succinctly and concisely bringing about their case, showing the 9-year-old girl as important as showing his chief saying his actions exceeded the scope of what we do. That I've never seen that before. As many officers I've represented, I've never seen a chief take the stand. So the best I thought Mr. Chauvin could do was a hung jury. And for your listeners that don't know what that means, basically a jury must be unanimous, either not guilty or guilty. If one person holds out, then the jury will say, hey, listen, judge, we can't come to a decision. The judge will declare it hung, and it's a mistrial. So the prosecution then has a decision whether or not they want to go forward. So best I thought they could do, Marty, Mr. Chauvin, that is a hung jury. I couldn't see a full acquittal.
Blaine Jones joining me. All right. In Pittsburgh, oftentimes classified as racist and segregated. Does that happen in the courtroom when the jury sees, they've got a black attorney? Does it make it tougher for you, sir?
That's a great question, Marty. Gosh, you know, I don't know. I can tell you that I've never allowed anything like that to stand in my way as I have made it. But I can tell you, you know, I pride myself on being very candid with you, Marty.
Yeah.
You and I have a very nice relationship. When I first started my firm, I worked in the public defender's office for a very long time. And then I started my firm out of the trunk of my car in 2008. And I remember having discussions with my wife. We were putting together a website, and we decided not to put my picture on the website because we were afraid that the racist folks out there would not hire a black attorney. And then, of course, I started getting all these cases on TV and,
yep,
and so on and so forth.
Yep.
I couldn't hide my skin color anymore. But yeah, in the beginning, Marty, I did not put my face on my website for fear that people would not hire me, not because of my ability, but because of the color of my skin.
This is a fact. Oh, he's black. We got to get a white attorney. Hey, man.
Yeah, and I was afraid of that.
It's the world we live in. If you can make one reform, whether it's in the system where you play or on the place where the cops work, what would you do, sir?
Geez, Marty, you hit me with the outstanding questions this morning. I'm glad I ate my Wheaties and took my vitamins.
Yeah.
Let me see. If I can make one, I would like to see a trial where socioeconomically disadvantaged people weren't at a disadvantage in trial. And what I mean by that is, if you have a person that doesn't have maybe a certain level of education,
right,
maybe can't afford certain clothes, it's difficult for them to get on the stand, look at the jury who may be middle class or upper middle class, and speak with them. It's a different life experience. If we could somehow make sure that a jury of your peers really meant a jury of your peers. Because remember, when the founders put together this Constitution and so on and so forth, theoretically it's beautiful, but a jury of your peers, Marty, you and I, we have different life experiences.
Right.
Would we be considered peers? I'm not so sure about that. So I think that's what I would change. And in the law enforcement profession, I know so many officers. In fact, a lot of my good friends are officers. I think if I could do anything with law enforcement, a lot of people don't realize, a lot of law enforcement that I talk to, they want body cameras. They
yep.
want this stuff. They want
yep.
the Chauvins of the world out.
Yep.
So I would say, you know what, get all the Chauvins out and allow the good men and women of law enforcement to do their jobs to protect and serve.
All right, my man. Thanks, Blaine. It's always a pleasure.
The pleasure is mine, my friend. You stay safe.
All right, man.
Odyssey celebrates Mother's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.